edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. We are so blessed to have with us Inspector Bill Miker. I want to thank Brent Bolesky from Spy Theater. Brent Bolesky, thank you so much for arranging this, with John. Really, Inspector Bill Miker is a key resource, intelligence source, great background information. This man has done more in his life than most people can even imagine, and we're very fortunate to have him. And thank you, Brent Bolesky. Thank you, John. Thank you so much. I do want to mention, although it's scheduled to be on InfoWars either today or tomorrow, I couldn't do today. I had a scheduling conflict, so I'll be on InfoWars on Monday. Right now, it's just confirmed today for Monday. So we're going to be talking about, in fact, I'll be talking about a federal investigation that I'm working on exposing that with some people who want to get it out. It's kind of flying underneath the radar right now. Not to tell any tales out of school, but just to bring people up to speed. And I think it's out there. It's kind of simmering in the public domain, but the significance of which is just not being recognized. So InfoWars on Monday. I was talking to my friend Pat Campbell, KFAQ, Tulsa. Yeah, Megyn Kelly interview, perhaps, right? No, I think I'm going to decline that, Pat. Thank you so much for offering to broker that for me. I'm going to decline that. But, you know, the first segment with Inspector Bill Miker, we were talking about everything from the International War Crimes Tribunal, kind of setting the stage, kind of going a little bit from what he talked about last time that he was with us, to the lack of critical thinking. The one thing that's really key as well, what he started out by saying and was talking about, is this diversity, self-interest, incredible selfishness, I suppose, that exists when we talk about I'll just leave it at that. You can go back and listen. Investigators fail, by the way, and this is important. Investigators fail when they don't deviate from their investigative theory. And I've seen this happen myself as an investigator, but certainly I would defer to Inspector Miker. I've seen this happen in my capacity as an investigator, where investigative blinders can really be a detriment to the person looking at a case or a series of cases, and that kind of set the periphery of critical thinking as well, but that blinders the lack of deviation from investigative theory. So, Investigator Miker, how does this relate to the Russian collusion theory that we see taking place and developing? If you want to address that now.
Sure. You know, just before I do, I just correct one thing that Joe had said. You know, today in the education field, we're not teaching people how to think, we're teaching them what to think. And again, that permeates as these people go into jobs as investigators. I want to be an investigator. And, okay, here's your job. And when they lack the critical thinking, just as you pointed out, as an investigator, yes, of course, you have if a crime's already been committed, you have hopefully a basis of what was the motivation, what was behind it, who was behind it. And you have a focus, but you can never lose sight that you could be wrong. And you can never take away from the fact that if you are only focused on bringing the information that bolsters your argument, but you're ignoring all the other information out there that could actually make you change your investigative direction. People have egos, and many people don't want to admit after putting weeks or months of time into something that they got it wrong. And again, there's a reason why innocent people do get convicted. And part of that is because of the rigidity of thought. And again, it goes with not teaching people how to think, but what to think. And so if you want a preordained outcome, then you just keep on that narrow path. And as you know, you can't help, every time I turn on the news, you just roll your eyes because it's this Russian collusion nonsense.
Right.
And to me, you know, initially, hey, wow, it sounds, pretty ominous. And then You keep waiting for somebody to give you, you know, a hard data point. Something, you know, I see people driving 100 miles an hour, whether it be in the media or in the political process, but it's like nobody's at the wheel. Which direction are you going, and how are you getting there, and why are you going there? And it seems very clear to me that people, the greater public, that is, has bought into a messaging, a massaging of thought, but it's not backed up by any hard critical facts. And listen, we do it for the right reasons, but if we can do it for the right reasons, we can also do it for the wrong reasons. And that is, we do in government from time to time put out information, whether it be in the form of a press release, whether it be in the form of a news conference, to put information out there, not because we want the public to know, but because there's a certain individual or a group that's really who that message is designed for. And typically when you do, these undercover investigations, we want our target to see a certain news story. We want them to talk about it with us, or we want to trigger a conversation between maybe co-conspirators where we have wiretaps up, where we want to see are they talking about this news release or something that came out in the news. There are times I've seen.
If I can stop you right there, to what extent, Inspector, in those occasions, was the media aware of that, or were they never aware that you were doing this specifically for a mission critical purpose?
We typically wouldn't disclose that up front because of operational security. But there does come a point where, you know, you don't want to keep the media on side. I believe that, you know, the world is better off having responsible journalism. But that's the key, responsible journalism, not yellow journalism. And we're in a day and age where, you think back before CNN came along, you know, everybody thought, hey, a 24-hour news channel, who's going to stay and watch that? You know, we're conditioned to watch the 6 o'clock news. And so you would get your news in one burst over an hour period, and the rest went on. All of a sudden, you're into this 24-hour news cycle. It's media is, you know, owned by the right and managed by the left. So you get the messaging that, I guess the leftist thinking people want to see out there, but it's all about profits. It's all about, you know, what's driving it. Remember, self-interest, greed, power, or ego. All these media outlets in the United States are conglomerates, and it's all driven by ad revenue and who's watching it. And so it becomes more about entertainment than it does about actual hard facts. You know, the reason that most journalists don't go on to testify in criminal trials is because they're not dealing in facts. You know, when you've testified, you can't give them what you think. You got to tell them what you know. And anything else is hearsay. So, you know, the standard in a courtroom is far different than the standard in a media outlet. And again, I look at this Russian collusion. If you didn't have the information by now, you're not going to have it, you know, because all of this has a historical context. So you've got the apparatus of the entire U.S. government, both its overt and covert capabilities. Where's the smoking gun? What I see is smoke and mirrors, and it's very clear that there is another agenda at play. That's how I interpreted it, at least. And again, what I said earlier, for a lot of good reasons, I don't know if I'll quite use the word manipulate, but we use the media for an objective, which is to take a murderer off the street, typically. We don't do it for minor crimes, but it's for serious offenses or where we believe there's a conspiracy. People want to come and blow something up. We need to figure out ways to intervene, because we still live in societies with the rule of law. Without the hard evidence, we can't do anything. And we don't want to do a preventative measure at this point, because we don't think we've identified everybody in the conspiracy. So, you know, there are these other tools that you try to use. But the problem now is I sit in the seat of power in one of these organizations, well, I actually want to get promoted. I actually see a different career path than this political master. I need to support him or her in such a way that maybe I'll use those media channels that we have and put a little spin on the messaging that I want to put out there. Of course, human nature is human nature. Nobody is as pure white as the driven snow. So you are going to have those thought processes and those actions taking place 100%.
So, okay. Now, as this applies, if we can bring this back to or keep this on the topic of the Russian collusion theory, as it applies to this, the agenda, the objective appears to be purely political, and at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the environment where innocent people do have a tendency, or people who are not primary targets end up being not just targeted but charged with things. Is that a fair statement?
Well, they get, you know, it's like they say, collateral damage.
Yeah.
You were never the intended target, but, you know, bad luck for you. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time to thwart our ambitions. I mean, it's very clear with this whole, you know, Russian collusion hubra that, you know, you think about what I just said earlier. You know, if you want to know who controls you, you know, look who you can't criticize. It's, you know, Donald Trump is the president of the United States. But do you think he's really in control? People are criticizing him every day. And they're doing it, whether it be the truth or not the truth. And I'm not defending the guy. I don't know him. But I'm watching this, and I'm seeing somebody who ought to be the most powerful man in the world, and he's being attacked by all sides, by all people. What is it that they fear about him so much? I don't think it's because of some of the past remarks he's made. I don't think it's because of some of the flaws in his character that he may possess. It's because he represents something different. And what he's representing that is different, it is why I brought up earlier about Abscam. Why is it that the elected elite, that 1% who serves the 0.1%, because you can't serve the 0.1% unless you're close to a seat of power to pass legislation, to pass banking laws, to provide access to opportunities that the great masses will never see and will never have the opportunity. And so, in my view, you know, President Trump is not the most powerful man in America. Otherwise, he wouldn't be attacked like he's being attacked. He is onto something, and it's frightened those around him. And again, as I said earlier, the United States, like other Western countries, has been infiltrated by many people who don't bring what I call a purity of purpose to what they do. I remember, just to backtrack a bit, when I went off to join the Mounties, I was a bond trader from London. I came back. My father was a career naval officer. In fact, he was Canada's NATO representative for 13 years on what they call Link 11, Link 12, but on communications. And my father, I always saw him studying. I always saw him. There were times he was away for a year at a time. But I remember when he drove me to the airport, he said, "Look, Bill, there are times you're going to know fear. There's times you're going to be tired. Why should I bother?" He says, "Remember, duty to service. You're joining a uniformed service. You're joining to try to do the right thing. You know, if you're tired, suck it up. If you know fear, get over it." And that's duty to service. What I don't see today to the same level of my father's generation is that same commitment, that purity of purpose that says, "I'm here to defend the Constitution in the United States. I'm here to fight enemies, both foreign and domestic. I'm here to look after my brothers and sisters." You know, that exists with many people, but not enough of them. And the problem is, these people who have a purity of purpose, they're typically out there doing the job. While they're out there doing the job, they're not playing the political game that allows them to get highlighted as somebody who is malleable to the policy centers. And most people who are in policy centers have never walked the walk. And that's what I see when I look at what's happening today in the United States, and certainly in Canada as well.
And is this not that this is necessarily important, but is this a kind of a Western mindset that we're seeing, a pervasive Western mindset? And I guess the reason I ask that is because when we look at the what's taking place across the globe, it seems like things are different everywhere, but specifically there's this change taking place within the West, the Western mindset, and as you call it, purity of purpose in particular.
I believe so. I mean, I've been living in Asia for 10 years. I've traveled extensively through the Middle East, Africa, in Asia. And the thing that I really observe, I look at Hong Kong, okay? Hong Kong's about 8 million people. You're close to Chicago. What's the population of Chicago?
We were just there.
We were just talking about it, too.
Eight,
I don't know.
No, eight. It's
9.2 million?
Maybe.
Okay. So Chicago, about 9 million. Hong Kong, about 8 million. One weekend in Chicago, you'll see more violent crime than you will see in a decade in Hong Kong. You know,
really?
Put that in comparison. And you know, Hong Kong, everybody thinks everybody's rich. No, listen, land prices are through the roof. That, again, looks after that 1% very well. But for the rest of them, the majority of people here are living in housing estates, council estates. The minimum wage here is only about $4.50 US or $5 US an hour. You know, we hear all this stuff in the news about all the wealth. Yeah, there's great wealth here in Hong Kong, but it's not going to everybody. And yet, I can walk, and my wife, my children, they can walk any street in Hong Kong and be safe.
And Mr. Roger, that's it. Yeah, wait, the population of Chicago is between 2.7 and 3 million.
And I apologize. So. However, it does, and I included
right,
this
from
Milwaukee to Gary is the greater Chicago area, which is 9.2. I apologize for that. But the point's the same, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, the point is the same. The this is a cultural and a societal issue. The other thing about here in Asia and in India, you know, they're going to overtake many of our youth simply because they're brought up to understand that nobody's going to give you a free ride. You know, there's the social net. There's a social safety net here, but it's minimum. You know, the Asian way is if you're not going to work for it, why should I give it to you? And there's a very set way of looking at things that, hey, I'll look after my family, even if there are problems. I'm not going to rely on the community because I don't want to lose face that can't look after a mother or a father. So there's a strong cultural bond over here, but also, you go to the universities here, they're learning, the kids here and in China and in India and in Eastern Europe, they're learning engineering, they're learning medicine, they're learning science, they're learning chemistry, they're learning tech, they're not taking, female studies, all these airy-fairy that, how's that going to help you build a bridge? Listen, I if I want diversity, I want diversity in my entertainment. I want diversity in the grocery store. I don't want diversity for the sake of diversity when it comes to critical things. You want diversity as the main criteria for the guy who flies your plane, the guy who does the root canal on you? Of course not. And yet, somehow, when it comes to the security and well-being of our homes and our communities, we've embraced just for the sake. I'm all in favor. I'm married to an Asian woman. The grandparents of my children, adopted grandparents, I call them, are Malaysian Muslim. I got none of this anti-rhetoric based on race or religion. That's not what I'm talking about here. And again, you know, you just think logically and look logically. The there's no way that somebody is going to get a contract to build a bridge with what they've been educated with, 5 years of fluff. Then you have, I can hire somebody from India, I can hire somebody from overseas who is hungry, who knows that the only way that they're going to get anything is by doing it themselves. They're much more self-reliant and self-sufficient. And at one time, that was what America was famous for. Until about 30, until the 60s, late 60s, you know, America led the world by its innovation, by what it did in the Second World War, after the war, you know, the rebuild of countries, the response to calamities all over the world, the inventions, you know, there was so much that the world admired, respected, and followed. and to a degree still do, but you know, there's been a rot from within. And so nobody's going to tell me when I connect the dots that America is better off today than it was 40 years ago, but in terms at least of security.
Man, you are absolutely right. And I know some of your notations include that, you know, as you said, diversity is good in entertainment and, of course, in grocery shopping, but disastrous for public safety and national security. And this is what we see here. And you bring up a good point. We're seeing where you are at, you are seeing education, the practical education based on need and based on, based on values that we had a half a century ago but have somehow squandered away. We don't have that here anymore in the United States and even in Canada. It's gone by the wayside. It's all emotion driven as opposed to need driven or practical sense. So you're absolutely correct. Is there any way to get back? And I guess what's the answer to that? Now, this is me asking you personally and professionally, well, what's the answer to this? Is there an answer to this, or is there a way to get back there?
Well, that's a very good question, and I really don't have a definitive answer. I think that we have a pathway because we saw what worked in the past when we held people accountable, when we made people self-reliant. You know, it's very classic. I mean, you've probably seen the cartoon, you know, where it says, don't feed the bears because they learn how to be bears and to be self-reliant. The welfare state creates that same sort of thinking. You know, if there's more incentive for me just to sit back and be fed, what incentive is there for me to go out and learn to be self-sufficient? And again, we've embraced and we're creating an indoctrination from our children upwards that everybody deserves the same thing. No, they don't deserve the same thing. Everybody deserves equal opportunity. But if somebody's going to work harder than the other, they deserve more. If somebody's going to take bigger risks and it works out for them, they deserve what they get. I don't begrudge anybody who's been financially successful as long as they did it the old-fashioned way through hard work, sweat, and labor. You know, how many times have we heard, you know, what I call the champagne socialists complaining about the actions or wealth of an individual? Well, you know, some of those individuals, you know, like they say, it took me 20 years to become an overnight success. I didn't get it because I was born into it. I didn't get it because I married into it. I did it through hard work, sweat, and labor. And again, it's how do we get back to it? We have got to take back reality. And these reality shows on TV is not reality. It's just entertainment. And look just at the recent election in the by-election in Georgia. You know, this is one small county, and a local person versus somebody who lived outside. But yet, why is California and New York caring what happens in that small center in Georgia? There's other interests at play here. And I tell you, it always bothers me when I see these celebrity types out there who are slamming the evilness of certain political leaders and political opinions and viewpoints. Everybody's got, I'm entitled to my viewpoint, but I don't like yours, so I'm going to shut you down. And the thing that really bothers me, it really does bother me, is when I see some of these Hollywood types going on about, oh, we have to do more to help the people who aren't in America, but we need to do more. As I live in my gated community and gated house with bodyguards or chauffeurs, sure. Do more for humanity. But where it really gets me, and I use only because he said it, I'm not picking on him, but somebody like George Clooney. You know, I remember a few years ago reading an article where he was asked, do you think you'll ever run for politics? And quite frankly, I like his movies. I enjoy his movies. But he says, no, he says, I've taken too many drugs and a bit more guttural than what I'm going to say, but he said, I've taken too many drugs and slept with too many women to ever have a career in politics. Uh-huh. But the thing about that bothers me, he with his buddies, you know, and again, I don't know what drugs he's using, but I'm assuming probably some cocaine.
Sure.
So you think that eight ball or that half gram or ounce that you had for your party and your friends, you think that was made especially for you? No, it's made as part of a one-ton or two-ton shipment. There are policemen making $300 a month being assassinated because they're paid $600. The cartels are paying $600 to shoot honest policemen in Colombia. You know, we forget that, you know, Mexican policemen and their families are being slaughtered. A good friend of mine was with the Guadalajara police, fairly senior, and he finally left because he said, Bill, I had to go shopping in armored personnel carriers with my wife and kids. And there's a reality to the world, but these guys saying, hey, we're here to save the world. Give me my line. And not understanding that you're contributing to the death and murder of innocent policemen, and you're affecting their families. So, you know, take your holier-than-thou spiel and shove it somewhere else, because I'm not buying it.
Amen, brother. We're talking with Inspector Bill Miker. Somebody, I believe, is probably the most foremost authority, world's foremost authority on the investigation of money laundering. And I want to thank Brent Pulaski from Spy Theater.
Definitely got the experience, and very well spoken. We're covering a lot of ground today.
Very much.
And you just reminded me, Mr. Miker, I've mentioned it a few times this week. There's a great series this week, America's War on Drugs, that covers some of what you're talking about, and I mean, it goes into much greater detail about the money laundering and how the U.S. government allowed drugs and money to funnel through to fight different wars, whether it was communism or whatever else. But folks, he'll be with us for another segment, Inspector Bill Miker.
I'd like to get his take on the current war on drugs when we come back.
Yeah.
Because I got a real problem with what's going on.
We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Erickson.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trading Post in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.trainpostandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
radio and television studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania, broadcasting right now to 64 countries, 64 on the hook right now. I want to say hello to everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks so much for your belief and trust in us as we walk through this minefield of current events together. And we've got a deep background guest, a guy that I really believe, knowing what I know about Inspector Bill Miker, and thank you, Brent Bolesky, so much, Spy Theater, for arranging this with John. You want to know anything about financial crimes, about money laundering, about the way the system works, about the way the system should work. This is the guy. And he offers the context and the perspective of the way things are today. And he's a class act, in my view, and it's early where he's at in just ought to say Hong Kong. Okay, so he's over there. He has no social footprint other than his LinkedIn profile for security reasons. But nonetheless, we've got him and we like him. Brent Bolesky, thank you. And Inspector Bill Miker, thank you so much. Come on back and go ahead and
always happy to come back. You'd asked earlier, what are the things we need to do to get back on the right foot? And to me, there's a great friend of mine, Joe McCarthy, the chaplain and volunteer fireman with the Suffolk County Fire Department. But Joe represents what America used to be, compassion for neighbors, values. I mean, he's obviously the chaplain, but compassion for people, concerned about what's happening in the community. Joe reached out to me a few years ago because he had heard me speak or saw some publications. And Joe, was offended by some of the financial chicanery that he saw going on. And he reached out to me for a bit of advice and what can be done about it. I believe it was dealing with naked short selling. There's so many different ways that the public gets screwed. But Joe has always had that, what I talked about earlier, that purity of purpose, that thing where you put your head down, you work, you look after people. And that's the kind of people that need to bring America back onto a solid footing again.
Well, Joe McCarthy, we honor your service, your purity of purpose, and your class act. I was out in Suffolk County. This is probably a decade ago. Joe and I, you and I were out there.
I remember. What were you talking about?
We actually met some Walter firemen and some police of Suffolk County. So perhaps we might have met Joe McCarthy and not known it. But thank you, Joe McCarthy. Thank you so much. Joe, right? Not John. It's Joe.
Joe McCarthy. Right. Like fishing, Joe's your man.
All right. So this brings us into really this kind of offers a nice segue into where we're at today. Just go ahead and. I want to ask you this before we go any further. You had mentioned about George Clooney and about his admission of whatever drugs that he might have taken. I'm looking at this. We're looking right now in the United States. Oh, this big opioid epidemic that's taking place right now. I'm struggling to understand this because what I see are veterans. I see veterans who have had limbs blown off and are suffering immensely. I see cancer patients. I see people that have terminal or chronic illnesses who are being denied pain medication because of some mope out there, trying to get their freak on with some opiates, and a small number of people actually end up, dying through overdoses. But the people I see paying for this are the people the most in need. Help me out with this, Inspector. What's going on here? And is it right?
Well, no, certainly not right. Heroin as an opiate has been around for over 100 years. What you're seeing now, though, is you're seeing carfentanil, fentanyl, but carfentanil especially that's being manufactured, and that's what's decimating most of the population. But yeah, to me, it's lunacy. We have the same thing in Canada. By background, I used to run the drug section for the Mounties in their third largest detachment in Canada, and Vancouver, a beautiful city, but better watch where you go because there's a junkie in almost every downtown street corner aggressively panhandling. You leave a dollar in your car, you can be guaranteed your window's going to be smashed and it's going to be taken out. It's basically open shooting galleries over large blocks of the city. That's the reality nobody wants to face, but that exists. And it exists because we facilitate it. You know, if your child's a diabetic or you're a diabetic, you got to go buy your needles. But if you make bad choices and you want to self-medicate, we're going to give you a free needle at the needle exchange. And I used to, when I first started undercover, I wanted to meet my targets. I would go down in what's called a rig. That's your needle. I would go where all the other junkies were and get my rig from the needle exchange van as it comes around. Now you've got safe injection sites. So, hey, let's facilitate people's and enable their habits. And again, we're a just society, so we can't let people sleep out in the cold. There's a lot of sleeping room in a lot of these cities, but a lot of these junkies, they don't want to be in and be quiet by 10 p.m. at night when it's lights out. Oh, I'm a free person. You can't tell me what to do. Yeah, well, too bad, because I'm paying for it. You know, this whole thing about war on drugs, I think it's been misclassified. There's not a war on drugs. If there's a war on drugs, you'd be carpet bombing the fields where the opiates or the cocaine or whatever is being produced. If it was a war on drugs, you'd be double tapping, you know, and letting God sort them out later. Those who are importing and dealing drugs. I do have a great deal of sympathy if somebody becomes an addict. But again, that's still by their choice. Sometimes you get weak people. Sometimes you have people who have other mental health issues, and so they gravitate to the drugs. Right. But there are people who prey on these people. You know, it's that middleman who's not a user, but he's making his money. Those people, war on drugs, you know, double tap them.
Right.
That's what I believe.
Okay, and I'm with you there. Yeah, because we're not taking care of the problem. We're punishing the... We're punishing a segment of society, and it really gets me with the veterans, especially the veterans who are, you know, just live in constant pain because our country sent them out overseas. They get blown up. They come back here, and they're missing appendages. They've got lifetime injuries, and they're not being, and their suicide rate is huge, number of suicides every day. Most of them live in chronic pain, and yet this so-called war on drugs affects them the most, or the terminal patient, or the whatever it might be, and the legitimate people.
That special that was on the Americans' War on Drugs, it went over a lot of this stuff. You know, how the war on drugs, you know, drugs are, it's like the war on terrorism. It's open-ended, and there's no definitive goal, you know, it added to the militarization of the police, they argue. But one of the most fascinating things about it was how the same government that's declaring the war on drugs is the government that is, you know, in Afghanistan and has increased opium production, you know, over the past 15 years, hundredfold, if not more, how they allowed, as you said, Mr. Miker, you know, and even partnered with the Sinaloa drug cartel, how they partnered with a number of drug traffickers in the past, allowing the drugs to come in, even, in some cases, bringing them in with government, transportation. But then, you know, on the other side, once they're out on the streets and they crack down, they use, I mean, it was just a very eye-opening series, and it showed the extent of the hypocrisy in the drug war. And I think people need to understand that the government, I would say, is the biggest drug dealers of them all. And then you have the legal drugs, which is what we're talking about. You know, they tell you, you know, not to use these street drugs, but then they turn the pharmaceutical industry into, you know, a de facto legalization of drugs. And pushing those drugs on the society. Yeah, so there's a lot of areas that...
It's a very complex problem. I mean, the fact is, you know, some 18-year-old in a brief moment makes a bad choice, and then they're on a slab. I mean, who wants that?
Right.
You know, any parent. I get that.
Right.
But, you know, everybody has been taught from day one, drugs are bad. Drugs are bad, and yet you get this message from Hollywood that glorifies drug use. You know, it glorifies an athlete who was a great athlete, got into cocaine addiction, and then they do a front page story on him because, oh, he's recovered. What a hero. That's no hero. What about the guy who never touched drugs? You know, he did it all the right way, but there's no front page story on him. So in a perverse way, we're allowing our messaging to glorify poor choices and poor behaviors. And definitely, you know, you have doctors out there rather than have to deal with patient, okay, let's just fill out the prescription. You know, you deal with it later. And so that's part of the problem.
That's true.
But I think, you know, people say, hey, it's not a criminal issue. It's really a medical issue. Okay, fair enough. Let's treat it as a medical issue then. If there's cancer attacking your body, you fight it. And drugs is a cancer that's devastating America. Do we stop the fight on cancer? Do we stop looking for cures? Do we stop treating when somebody's afflicted with cancer? Of course not. So why do we as a society want to say, I can get rid of illegal drug acts overnight, just legalize everything? What people fundamentally forget in this whole argument, though, is that organized crime does not exist to sell drugs. Organized crime exists to make money any way it can.
Bingo. There it is. Yes, go ahead.
So legalize it all. But what purity? They're just going to come up with new stuff. Every day there's new drugs hitting. Everybody understands business marketing. But you know, when the war on drugs, to use that phrase, in the 80s and 90s was really getting more aggressive. I remember talking to some DEA guys, and they're saying, you know, a lot of our typical drug targets are now getting involved in stock fraud because the penalties are a lot less. You know, it's risk reward. And as the streets are flooded with cocaine, supply and demand, the prices are going down, but the incarceration length of time was actually a deterrent. So let's just do financial crime now. And that's why you've seen this explosion to a degree of massive financial fraud and crime in the last 20 years is because being a drug dealer for how much you were making wasn't worth the risk.
Man, I would love to see your case files, Inspector Micro. I really would. I'd like to have like a week in a locked room with your case files. I really would. That would be. I'm sorry. I just.
Again, but this goes back to what I was saying. You know, my views are formed by my own experiences, and nobody taught me, you know, what to think. They taught me how to think. You know, primarily my father. And I actually had good, you know, not all of them were good, but I had some pretty good mentors in the Mounties and with other people I've worked with. And so I've been fortunate because they haven't been blighted by this political correct nonsense. They know if the water's leaking onto the boat that you either plug it or you know, put on a life jacket. You don't talk about what color the boat you're going to paint it as you're sinking. You know, so that's the nonsense. And you know, think about something that's just happened in the last 2 weeks, and you know the USS Fitzgerald, the destroyer,
yes,
in the Sea of Japan. And before I get into my sort of take on it, you know, I used to, when I was a young policeman, I had to go to car accidents, part of my duties. And I would come to a car accident, and I would say to the drivers involved, "Listen, an accident happened because it was either an act of God or somebody made a mistake. And I don't see an act of God here, so." I think you had a left-hand turn when you shouldn't, or you didn't signal when you should have, and so here's your ticket. And that was how I always rationalized it. So I look at the Fitzgerald. So was it an act of God? I don't think so. So it's either an accident or it was by design. And I don't hear a lot of people. There are some people coming out there, but I read the news. That's all I have. And I say, okay, you've got this very modern warship. So if it's an accident, then it speaks to the degree of incompetence of the people that are now in the U.S. Navy, that with all that equipment, both visual. I mean, you're talking a 30,000-ton freighter. It wasn't a dark and stormy night. It was fairly clear sailing conditions. Officers of the watch, you know, all the other equipment. So it's either a catastrophic failure in leadership and function. Again, goes back a bit more to my diversity comment. Are we really putting the right people in the right jobs?
Right.
And then, you know, we've seen with Major Hassan, there are people within the armed forces of the United States who are not loyal to the United States and certainly to its sailors. Was there somebody on that vessel that sabotaged it either before it went out to sea or while they were there that disabled or did something in concert? Now, that's one theory. The other way of looking at it is, and others have spoken about this, but right now, what are you seeing in the Straits of Malacca, in Mindanao, in South Philippines, you're seeing a resurgence in Islamic terrorism, Abu Sayyaf and a few others. But they've always had a marine. I mean, piracy in the Straits of Malacca is something that's been a time-honored tradition. And you have that Japanese-owned vessel, 100% crewed by Filipinos. Do we know if any of those Filipinos are from Mindanao? Do they have, Islamic jihad sympathies? I believe it's possible. I'm not saying it's probable, but it's possible that there could have been collusion between somebody on the Japanese vessel and with somebody in the crew in the Fitzgerald. Again, if it's not an act of God, then it could either be shocking incompetence on the parts of two different vessels, or it is, or something more sinister. Putting it out there doesn't mean it's so, but you better be looking objectively at all the possibilities. You owe that to the seven sailors who died.
And that goes right back to what you said. Critical thinking skills and critical thinking, and investigators fail when they don't deviate from their investigative theory. And so either one applies, or both would apply here, in theory. So very good analysis on that. Indeed. Wow. Okay. The deep state rearing its ugly head kind of overlaps everything we've been talking about. And we've had people on, talking about the deep state, of course, and, you know, what comprises the deep state. I'll just leave it at that. To what extent do you think, from what we've talked about, from the Russian involvement, or the allegations of Russian involvement, which are non-existent, at least the proof thereof is non-existent, to everything that's happening today, to what extent are we seeing this attempted assassination, political assassination of the presidency, or of the president and of the presidency of the United States? And how would you classify it as an inspector, basically looking at this as if this was a criminal case, things taking place by elements within our government? What do you see taking place within our government to marginalize and I'm using the term assassinate metaphorically, but assassinate the president and assassinate the presidency of the United States?
I think there are several key features, and it goes back with the coronation that didn't occur, and there was an establishment that believed, Hillary Clinton was going to be president. People already had their positions lined up. They already had their trade-offs for being political sycophants within government, for a careerist move. And all of a sudden, out of left field comes Donald Trump, who is your classic bull in the china shop in that he is not politically correct. He calls a spade a spade. You know, I don't agree with everything he says or does, but I certainly respect that, you know, he seems to be what America needs right now in terms of identifying those issues that have taken America back. I said to American friends before the election, you know, both pro-Trump and anti-Trump, I said, listen, it's a very simple choice. So I'm a Canadian, I live in Asia, I'm purely looking outside in, but if you think America's been on the right path for the last 30 years, then the choice is simple. Go with the status quo, which is what Hillary Clinton represented. If you believe that there's something wrong in America and it's not on the right path, then you at least have a choice with somebody who very clearly is not part of the political establishment. He's not part of that same pathway. So he can be a disruptive factor such that you can shake the trees and hopefully rebuild or put forth a better managed America. And that's my honest view on it. But I look at things like this. As you know, the law, there's strict liability. Ignorance of the law is not an excuse. And yet, I observe, and by all accounts, Director Comey is supposed to be a pretty decent fellow. Talk to guys in the FBI. But many of them talk to me, and they're a bit flabbergasted at some of the things that they were observing. But how is it that when it comes to classification of documents and the security of documents and IT systems, I know when I worked in government, that was sacrosanct. You know, when you came into to my office, even on the outer door, you're not even allowed to bring your cell phone. You have to leave it out there. You know, we use Tempus computers. We you know, in my office where we had the Stu phone, so we can maintain communications. You know, I had to harden all the fiber optics in the building. Cost $100,000 just to service our office because we were in a civilian building. You know, security is actually very real and has a great detrimental impact if protocols and procedures aren't followed, you know, a la Snowden, Manning, etc. But when I see that the notion of strict liability has gone out the window, when I see the director of the FBI say, yeah, had all the appearance of a walk like a duck, quack like a duck, but we didn't treat it as a duck, that's a big red flag for me. And then I see, it's, again, if I openly admit to putting a confidential or a protected document out into the public domain, I'm going to have hell to pay. And you know, Director Comey, to his credit, acknowledged that he was the leak of a sensitive conversation. Think about it. You're the head of the FBI. You're having a private conversation with the Commander-in-Chief and the President of the United States, and you take that conversation, make your notes on it, And then I don't imagine he did it on his home computer if he was during the daytime. So then provide that information to the New York Times. Many people of lesser rank would be fired. And now the fact he's gone, but it still deals with the issues that there are serious red flags, whether it be Bill Clinton meeting with the Attorney General on a tarmac a week before such a critical case, whether the notion of strict liability, if ignorance of the law is all of a sudden excuse for a political leader, then why isn't it a good excuse for me as a Joe citizen? You can't suck and blow at the same time, and that's exactly what's happening from my perspective. And so I would want to dig down. Why are these leaks happening? Is there a substance to the leaks? I know from doing covert ops that we put out information for strategic reasons. Strategic reasons in this case doesn't have to be to catch a bad guy. It could be to protect a fiefdom, protect an elitist establishment that is well anchored and is being well fed. And again, it's human nature is human nature. If I'm king of the castle and I'm eating steak every day, I don't want to eat hot dogs. And that guy, President Trump, represents that I might have to go out and eat hot dogs because the fat cows are no longer here.
Oh, great points. We have about 3 minutes left before the break. I want to make sure we get to this. Can you... And I see that you pointed this out. Snowden, Manning, WikiLeaks, you say that the with specifics how these have caused damage without having a clue how they have done so. Can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah.
Sure.
Knowing, by the way, I got to say this before we cut you loose. You're my favorite investigator. You really are. Okay, so you got about 3 minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay. Very simply, the you know, when Bradley Manning released all those documents. You know, Edward Snowden released 1.5 million files out there that not all of it dealt with what he was offended by, which is the metadata. So he doesn't know how covert operations are done. He doesn't know the infrastructure that's built around it to support it, because all of that's on a need-to-know basis. An analyst and a contractor wouldn't have that specific knowledge and wouldn't be given that specific knowledge. So he's offended by something. Let's deal with Manning, though, because it does impact things that I did. So when I was working undercover out of Miami, I had to meet a South African banker who would never come into the United States. The South African banker is a money launderer. He was the guy, in fact, who asked me if I could launder discounted bonds for Libya, North Korea, and Iran. He's the same guy that says, when you deal with me, you need to deal with our own cybersecurity. It's got 128-bit encryption. This is going back about 12, 15 years. And he said it's specifically designed to defeat the FBI carnivore computer, which I didn't even know it was till the FBI told me what it was, which is their system for monitoring. So these guys are switched on and sophisticated. And so when I would go to meet him, we wanted to record the conversations. And what was unique is from Canada, if I went to do a covert police action overseas, we would inform the Attorney General of that host country that, hey, we're operating here, maybe do assistance. In this case, the FBI said, look, Bill, the problem we have, we're not going to inform the police and some of the jurisdictions you're meeting because we don't believe we can trust them. We think they're corruption and compromise. So what happened? The American ambassador for those jurisdictions I traveled in, he had to have a FBI report to him providing we're going to be sending a covert operator in. His name is his real name is Bill Miker. Here's details on him. However, he is coming in covertly. His name is Bill McDonald. He's with Northern Star Shipping. Here's the company's names he's operating. And why do they do that? They do that because if something blows up when we're there, the ambassador doesn't want to be caught unaware because he has to deal with the political fallout of that local government. So that information, when it goes to the ambassador, is going out in cables. Is going out in communiques, you know, secure communiques. And Bradley Manning, he's, you know, those millions of cables, he has no clue what's in there. It could have been talking about, you know, Bill Mike, who's really Bill McDonald. That gets into the wrong hands. And that is the danger, because I guarantee you, there was disclosures, and there's no doubt in my mind that to Middle East or terror-prone countries, those type of cables would lead to the death of many people, because there's no question in my mind that terrorists will kill 10 innocent people to get the one suspected informant.
And you, Inspector Bill Miker, have had that experience. And I want to thank you so much for your time, your gift of time, early in the morning where you're at. Thank you so much for staying with us and giving us your expert analysis of events, past, current, and how they impact and how they affect us contextually today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. And to Joe McCarthy, the chaplain, volunteer fireman, Suffolk County. Brother, we're right there with you. Keep on keeping on, and our prayers are with you. And we're your good friend, Inspector Bill Miker. Good job.
We'll be right back.
Thanks, guys.
About an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.